Welcome to Inspiring Stories for Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Hello, my name is Tim McMillan. Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Stories brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. In this episode, we are going to chat to someone who's had a distinguished career in WA and Australian cricket, both as a player and as a coach. He's coached extensively here in Western Australia, but also had a stint in England as well. And one for the trivia buffs, he was at the helm when WA last won the Sheffield Shield. It was the Pura Cup, of course, back then. In fact, the last two, if you want to be strictly accurate. And many other things to chat about along the way. The birth of World Series crickets, an opportunity that our guest actually turned down at the time. So I wonder if that's a moment of regret all these years on. We'll find all that out over the course of the next hour or so. Let's say hello and welcome to Wayne Clark. Hello, Wayne.
Tim, how are you?
Going all right, thanks. How are you?
Great, thanks. And thanks for inviting me on.
Let's start with that question. Any regret about turning down Kerry Packer?
No. I don't think I would have got to the position I've done in cricket without probably turning that down. We might as well start with that, I suppose.
Yeah. But
it was a very, very interesting time. And the lead up to it, I think, I can always remember playing in a final up in Queensland, a one day final, where it had the Lilies and Marshes and it was Thompson and the Chapels and all that sort of stuff. And we had a $25 a day for our, this is a Shield, a Gillette Cup final in those days. And Jeff Thompson ended up talking to one of the ladies there, of course, one of the girls, which he ended up marrying. She was the model there. And they were getting $75 a day.
Right.
So people started, there was a lot of questioning being asked at that stage.
What would that equate to these days, do you reckon? 25 or 75 bucks a day.
Wow.
In today's terms, what's that, sort of 500 bucks?
Maybe that, yeah. Yeah, I would have thought. But for them to be getting three times what the players were.
Yeah.
And that was really the sort of things that were happening and players started to get that unrest. And that was about 1975, I think it was, 76. And then it just developed from there. I remember getting a phone call from Rod Marsh at one stage, you know, saying, look, you're liable to hear it, get a phone call in regards to maybe getting involved in something that's going to happen. And I thought, yeah, okay. And I eventually got the phone call. And it was one of those things, I was school teaching at the time, and there was security and all that sort of stuff that I had to sort of weigh up. But the way it was done, well, I got a bloke came down to Hillcrest Oval. I was playing a game of cricket and we had to go across the other side of the oval and behind a tree and having a chat about what we were going to do, or, you know, what the offer was. And at that stage, I'd just missed out on the tour to go to England. That had just, I got to the last sort of 20 and I'd sort of been told that, you know, you're in the mix and all that. And that's where it all happened over there. They started to ring players and you had to be sort of pretty quiet about it. You had to sort of say that, you know, don't say anything. But eventually I had to make that decision. I weighed up all the positives and the negatives. And I actually then rang Cricket Australia and just asked them where I sat. And because then I think the news had sort of come out by then. And they just said, look, you probably play in the first test match that, you know, that come along. So I sort of got that sort of bit of a guarantee. And I eventually said no. As it was, I think they played 2 years and got paid for four. Mm. So in those days, I think the contract was around about $22,000-$25,000. I said, look, I won't do it. And they actually came back to me and said, well, why don't you just play on your school holidays? And Rob Langer, I remember for Rob, Justin's uncle, he actually did that. And there might have been a couple of other players that actually accepted that they just played in there.
Yeah.
And the reason I don't regret it is because I don't know whether I would have got in the super test. They played in Ballarat. They played all these other things. And a lot of those guys, didn't hear from them. As it was, I was able to play for Australia, and I've always got that, you know, that cap and that number. And I did pretty well. Set a record in the first series against India. And then I think it sort of just got me sort of a bit of a name, which I then get into coaching and all that sort
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
Cricket Australia screwed me in the end, I think.
How so?
I was accused of having an action that probably wasn't as clear as snow. But I can remember in the test match here in Perth, the Indians sort of questioned me, and that was after I'd probably got Gavaskar out four times, I think it was, at that time.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, there's something wrong with the action. And so I remember Channel 9 came down, we did all the camera work, which there's not much there now. That, like in those days, it was just the camera from the side, and I was cleared. There was no yeah. risk about it. But that hung on me for over a period of time. I remember I went to the West Indies, and the first test match in the West Indies, I'd bowled. We were playing, you know, there was Richards and all those sort of things, and I bowled the first session, and at lunchtime, the umpire, a fella by the name of Douglas Sankhew, came in and said to the captain, he said, oh, I'm going to call Clark in the next next session.
You and Yardley were both under the microscope there, weren't you?
Yeah. And I changed ends. I bowled the full thing. I played the rest of the series except the last game in Jamaica. We played a lead-up game and Bruce got called for chucking them by Douglas Sankhew, who eventually went to World Series. So I didn't play in the last test. I had a crook back in that at that stage anyway, but I would have played in that. And it was interesting that there was an agreement that went back for many, many years, because in the off-season after West Indies, there was an article written by Peter McFarlane saying that I'd never play international cricket again.
Because of your action?
Well, I rang him up and I said, what's going on? He said, it goes back to Bradman days, and that when there was an agreement that anybody with a suspect action wouldn't play against England and all that. Now, if you look at Bruce Yardley's record, he played a lot in Australia, but he never got picked to go to England. I came back and I had my best Shield season. I didn't get picked in the series where we lost 5 or 6-0, and the conditions were absolutely ideal. I had nearly my best Shield season. He said to me, he said, I bet you get picked. There's a series between Pakistan and Australia, a two-test series. You'll get picked at that. And I got picked in a game at the MCG, and I think I got 3 for. But the next test was in Perth. I thought, okay, that's fine. I didn't get picked in Perth. But the squad that got picked in Perth, plus 2 or 3 others, were picked to go to England for a Prudential Cup. So, again, it was...
So he was probably on the money.
I think they were pretty much on the money, and... things just sort of fell apart from that. But so I was bitter that they didn't support
me. Was this known at the time? Or sort of known in cricket circles, but was it a scandal at the time?
No, that was just an agreement that had been made, and he knew about it. And the more I sort of looked into it, it sort of held way, didn't it? That sort of thing. But so I was a bit peeved with all that my career was probably cut shorter than what it was. So that might be my only regret. And I didn't, wouldn't have helped much if I'd come out in Grizzly anyway. So, but I continued to play a bit, and then I got involved in coaching. So that worked out okay.
You've just basically just given us a quick run through snapshot of your whole career, Wayne. What are you doing?
Well, that was only part of it.
Let's go and unpack some of that stuff in more detail. Let's go back to when you made your first class debut. 1974-ish. Can you remember the moment you stepped out for your first?
Well, I can remember my first
class game.
First one-day game.
Yep.
First one-day game, I think, was 70, might have been 72. And it really stuck out to me because I was able to open the bowling with Graeme McKenzie, who I just think is just one of the best bowlers ever.
Yeah.
You know, and you talk about someone that was stitched up by Cricket Australia, you know, that time when he was about to break the record. He was just and it's interesting, to, you know, you meet these guys that you've idolised and all that, and sometimes you're very disappointed. Definitely not with Graeme McKenzie. He's one of the great gentlemen of the game, and it was an absolute honour. But it was an interesting game. I got introduced to first-class cricket in those days pretty well, you know. The night before, I remember Rod Marsh knocking on the door at 4 a.m. looking for more beer. and it was just crazy, crazy stuff. And we played at the SCG, and I think we got them out for 260 or something. We bowled first. I bowled four O's for 38. I nearly got a bill from the SCG for the broken pickets, I reckon. I just kept bowling no balls, and it was absolute nightmare. But I can always remember we were five for 120, Jason 260, and then Rod Marsh went to the crease, and it was like, oh, yeah, right, I'd better get my pads on, I'll be batting soon. And he scored 98 not out. We won the game. He came in and he cramped up. The first thing he had was a beer. And I thought, well, this is not a bad way of playing cricket. Yeah. From there we went down to the MCG, and we played New Zealand in the final. So, and I got three or four for him. So that was sort of my start of my career. Yeah.
Set you on your way. So. Yeah, very good. Now, you mentioned India. We'll get into that right if we take a break, because there was a batter of some note, shall we say, that you seem to have in your measure. One of the greats, one of the absolute greats of the game. But somehow, Wayne, you managed to spook him.
Just my variation in pace. That's what he thought.
We'll tell you exactly who and how he did it right after this. This is Inspiring Stories. Wayne Clark is our special guest. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
And is that a chance? He's out. Yes. Gavaskar caught Kozia. Bowled Clark for three. Vansaka not out eight. One for 11. And Clark, who was the surprise bowler to open and share the new ball with Thompson, has one for 10. Well, here's the replay.
I think it comes off his pad, gets up and comes back and hits his body. Oh, what to do? It's very hard if he gets covered. It got very nasty and possibly came off the hand, I don't think.
How good is that old-style cricket commentary? Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? Take us back to that moment. I mean, Sunil Gavaskar, one of the absolute legends, and at the time, really, I mean, he was the one wicket you wanted to get, right, as a bowler?
Yeah, very much. I mean, they were full strength, you know. They were a good side, but not pace bowling. I mean, they're mainly based on their spinners and their batsmen. You know, they had some terrific players, and yeah, I can remember that. Then you know, I was given the new ball, which a lot of people were surprised with, but yeah, I was just lucky enough to get one and nip back and take the glove, and yeah. It sort of started a little bit of a run with Sunil Gavaskar.
Yeah, well, I mean,
a little bit of a love hate.
Yeah, lot of hate from him.
Well, no,
because I mean, there wouldn't have been too many bowlers that seemed to trouble him in the way that you did. What was it that that seemed to, you know?
I don't know. Make him
anxious on the crease.
I got him out the first six times I bowled to him. So yeah. It was that Test match. Then we played in Perth in a WA versus India. And then the Test match. He was 100 two or three times. But
still made some runs.
Yeah, we don't want to mess the story up, whether it's all facts and all that sort of stuff. But then he sort of got even, because he was the one that, with another fellow named Garvery, who was a bowler, who maybe his action was a little bit different, they were the ones that questioned it, because they thought I had a quicker bouncer. And how can you have a quicker bouncer? Such a quick bouncer for a guy that, you know, is not bowling, you know, express.
Yeah.
So it was the variation in pace, I suppose. But, yeah, I always call him my bunny, but I think I get a bit carried away by myself. I'm better now than what I was then.
Having said that, I mean, he would have been facing up to Tomo's bouncer, so he should have been pretty good at handing a quick short pitch delivery coming down. Flying at his head.
Yeah, look, he was a fantastic player, and as I said, he got three or four centuries during that series and that as well, which was he was just, once he got in, you know, he was a very difficult player to get out. But I got him a few times, so it was good. And so I got to live on that forever.
And do it. Call him your bunny. Just run with it forever. It makes a good dinner party story, I'm sure. And I'm sure you've told it once or twice.
I get a bit carried away.
Success on that tour earned you selection for the 78 tour of the West Indies. I suppose if there's a link between the two, You know, Gavaskar questioning your action, that continued, didn't it, into that tour of West Indies, which is where you ran into trouble with your old mate you mentioned, Douglas.
Yeah, Douglas Sanghugh. Mm. It did. I think once it was out there, there was, I copped it a bit for a while. But,
yeah.
I mean, I was comfortable
hard
with
it. Take, though. I mean, this is your craft.
Well, it is.
Bowling, and when people are kind of suggesting that it's illegal, even cheating.
Yeah.
It must have hurt.
I know that if vision was taken and you do it now, that there wouldn't be a problem.
No.
Not a problem. Not when you've got a bloke that's got 900 wickets that actually nearly should be playing baseball. But I suppose that's the thing that I look back and I just get really annoyed with that. And it was just that throwaway comment that suddenly got into the press and then and things happened with it. And I was pretty confident that I was okay. But And then I had problems with my back and that just sort of once you lose sort of half a yard or a yard at that level, it sort of brings you back to the field and that as well. So
we talk a lot nowadays about how bowlers need to be rested and rotated and how injury prone they are and how big a squad you need to go away on a tour.
Mm.
And you reference back, the good old days, let's say your era, Wayne, where bowlers just seem to go forever. But by the sounds of it, you would have been rested, in the modern times, you would have been rested far more than you were back then, given the back troubles that you had.
Before I went to the West Indies, I had an X-ray, and I think it might have been with a torch, but they said I had a sort of a little stress fracture, and they gave me the option.
So you play through it.
You want to keep going, or you'd want to go, and I wasn't going to miss out on that. So, but now everyone's so aware, and any little slide in, they give you a scan, whether it's on your thigh or whatever. And some of the guys, you wonder sometimes how much pain they can play through. But it is interesting because I'm still involved in cricket, at the local level, and the guys' awareness of their body, sometimes you just sort of think, crikey, but I can only bowl 35 balls tonight. I've been told I only can do this. Well, I can remember Glenn McGrath. I remember listening to an interview with him, and he wanted to bowl every day.
Mm.
Even if it was just go and have 30 minutes down at the nets and bowl. Now, I use the example of if I'm going to go out today and dig a hole with a shovel, I'm going to be as sore as anything over the next day, right? But if I'm doing that every day for the next 2 weeks, my body will become accustomed to it, you would hope, and it'll strengthen us for a period of time. It's the same with bowling. If I don't bowl, when I do bowl, my body's not prepared. It's a shock, And again, the good players, and I know Hazelwood was one that's sort of kicked up over this and wants to bowl on a regular basis, you've got to do what you expect in a match as much as you can at practice. Because if you just come in and bowl and, just go through the motions, once you get into an actual game where the batsman actually hits the ball and it doesn't go into the net, it actually goes for four and you realise, Jesus, I'm bowling rubbish, you sort of try that little bit harder, and that's when you probably do something to your body. And I just think that they should bowl, even if it doesn't have to be a lot, but you've got to keep your muscles moving. And doesn't matter what you do, you can go into the gym and try and replicate whatever you can. You can't replicate bowling because it's probably one of the most difficult things where you've got forward movement and rotation all at the same time. Unless you're doing it and you're using those muscles on a regular basis, I think you're going to leave yourself open for injury.
Mm.
And people call you, you're an old dinosaur, when you say, why are they having the rotations? And I can understand, give them a rest, no problem, but I can't see them stopping guys bowling as much as what they're doing over a period of time. And I would like to see it on a regular basis, that they're using those muscles. And sports science will knock me down, no risk at all. But I'm just knowing as a bowler, if I didn't bowl for a week and then I'd pull up sorer than I ever would, And now anytime you've got a little bit of pain, they'll give you time off, So it works, sometimes works the opposite.
How's the back now?
Buggered. not the best.
Do you ever roll the arm over now?
Oh, no, definitely not. That's one thing when I did finish. I didn't play much social cricket or, you know.
Even during your coaching days, though, which we'll get to in detail shortly, but never tempted, you know, where you're standing around the nets there. You're never tempted to just occasionally just set one down?
Not too often. No.
I just, that quicker bouncer stayed in the the dressing room.
I didn't want him to check it out.
very good. Your back, though, really brought an end to your playing days somewhat prematurely, though, didn't it?
Yeah, I think I was 31, I think, when I gave it away. But a lot of that, too, was you had to have a job.
Yeah.
You know, and I probably got out before they got me. in the States, so it's totally different now. I mean, if you're a player, you'll play as long as you possibly can now. Yeah. You'll be doing everything possible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the contracts that they get, and then, you know, you get injury payments, a whole bit. It's
different
totally
world.
Different. It's a different world.
Different world.
You know, but I don't know whether they have as much enjoyment as what we did in those days.
Let's take another break. After that, we'll get into your coaching days. A hugely successful time at the helm with the Western Warriors, and also in between those stints, a trip to England as well, which sounds like an adventure of sorts, and not without controversy at times as well. This is Inspiring Stories. Wayne Clark is our special guest. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. We are hearing the story of WA cricket legend Wayne Clark. Wayne, we'll get to your coaching in just a moment, but when you took a break from playing, it seems like you just sort of dropped out of the cricket picture altogether for a while. Is that a fair comment? I know you went and worked for Alan Bron's Swan Brewery while, and you had a liquor store and a grocery store.
I tried a few things different. As I said, I was a school teacher, which was absolutely ideal when I was playing, because you get plenty of time off.
And, what did you teach, by the way?
Primary school.
Yeah.
And I was inspired by a fellow by the name of Laurie Mayne that played Test cricket for Australia. He was my school teacher in year four.
Yeah, right.
And he left us to go and tour the West Indies at that time, and I always thought, oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So sport was always something that I had in mind. But, yeah, when I finished, I retired from first-class cricket in 84, and then I spoke to Rod Marsh, and I said, mate, you know, your job's going around. And so he ended up getting me a job at the Swan Brewery. So I was there for probably 12 years, best job ever.
Selling beer, basically. You're in heaven.
Well, when I first took it over, Swan was they were just the only ones around.
Yeah.
And then the America's Cup was won.
Yeah.
So then they'll bring it
good
here.
Good times.
And in 1987, then the opposition came across, and it was all thing. But I can always remember that. I'll tell you a quick little story that how good this job was. Because I was still coaching. I started playing coach as a couple of in the grade scene. I was doing a bit of that.
Yeah.
So at times when I got to training, I wasn't in the best condition. But I remember, if you remember Swan Premium cans, the black can.
The black can.
Black can. How good was that? Yeah. It was absolute rubbish. And I think it was just Emu Export with caramel in it and whatever. But we had to
edge off the Emu Export.
They tried to make it a national drink, and they come up with the theory that the best way to get around was to be seen drinking it. So 3 nights a week, I'd be given $400, which in those days, 1987, which is not a bad little earner, $400. And I could take as many as my mates, and we'd just go down the pub and drink. I'd buy them drinks.
As long as you had those black cans in your hand.
I had to drink black cans, which was terrible. And I'd be doing that 3 nights a week for about 2 or 3 months or something. And so, condition-wise, I lost a bit of my fitness over a period of time. But it was just a great job. I really enjoyed it. And then it became, I think, Bondi sold it, and the new mob came in, and it became very grocery and commercial. But so I got out and I got into a liquor store with a couple of mates. We bought one in Como, and then we were looking at another one up north the river. And I'll say now, if we actually got that, I'd still be in the industry.
Is that right?
I would have stayed.
Yeah.
But we didn't get it. So one of my partner's mates had got this good deal. We bought a Foodland store up in Midland.
Yeah.
Great. Really, really terrific. Hated it. Absolutely hated it. My ex and I were running it, and we got robbed, and they put a thing down the street, and we nearly went broke. So I just... But while I was there, I got a call from Tony Mann, who was cricket manager with WA at the time, and he just said, "Look, are you interested in coaching?" Yeah, you know, because I'd been out of the game 9 years. I did some commentary with Channel 9.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's another story.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't last on that because I was doing it with Bruce Walker, Michael Thompson and Mick Malone, and for one, I was just doing comments.
Yeah,
and we always used to do it from Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday from the last session, and it was always really good.
You know,
it was bloody great coverage.
I remember when it used to come on in the Arvo, it was brilliant.
And for one, I don't know how it worked, but because you used to go to the news, and I got left doing it, and you got to pass the Tino Altieri, who was there at the time.
Yeah.
And I just said, and now we'll go to Tina Altieri for the Channel 7 news.
Oh, no.
And it didn't go down that well. I can't understand it. I just felt it. So next year, I think Kim Hughes.
Too, right?
Yeah, Kim Hughes took my spot, I think. But, anyway, Rocket, and I said, look, no, I'm still in business. And why are you getting me? Why do you want me? Because I haven't been involved. But he kept, anyway, and they left it. And anyway, 2 weeks later, he came back. And in the meantime, I'd spoken to my mates. I was hating what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I took it on. So it was something totally out of the blue, something I didn't apply for. I went and obviously had to have a bit of a chat to them before they did it. And the main reason was that WA was in a fair bit of angst at the time. It was a really difficult time.
Yeah.
And they just thought with my people skills maybe that I might have been able to do something about it. So it was interesting.
Well, you certainly did, because after that, WA went pretty well for a while. Anyway, as I mentioned, our last two Shield victories were under your command in the late 90s.
Yeah, it was an interesting time because what had happened is that was the time that they changed the WA cricket team to the Warriors.
Yeah.
There was, I think, the Bush Rangers had just come in, so everyone was following suit.
Yeah.
So in their wisdom, the marketing department decided, well, what we need is young people to take charge of the team. And that's when they put Damien Martin and Justin Langer in as captain and vice captain. And they're both only 20 years old, I think it was. And you had people like Tom Moody, Bruce Reid, Valletta, and the list went on.
Mm.
So you had a group of the senior blokes just saying, what the hell's going on?
Mm.
Julian and that. You had these two who, you know, they sort of wanted to play Test cricket, but they're too busy about this leadership, which they're not ready for.
Yeah.
Then you had Gilchrist and Zura.
Yeah.
That issue was going on. And then you had the young fellas that are just sort of hanging around, which was like the Campbells and Bakers and Hussies and all that. So you had all this disruption within the group. And I'd dealt with Damien a little bit, and I can remember one of the first things I said to Damien, I said, look, mate, I don't think you should be captain. But I said, look, if you want to keep doing it, we'll stick with it. And he decided to stick with it, and we lost the first four or five games. And I look back on this, and if ever I've done anything for WA cricket, I think it was this and that I said to Damien, I think, and for him, because he wasn't scoring runs, he wasn't doing anything. I said, look, I think we've got to make a move here. You've got to move on, and if you want to go and play higher grades of cricket, you've got to start doing it. Otherwise, you're going to be dropped from this side.
Yeah.
So I went to the selectors, and the selectors said, no, we're not going to change it. I said, okay. So I went back to Mardo, and we had a discussion, and we sort of just took it on ourselves to make that decision.
Mm.
In the meantime, I'd spoken to Tom Moody and said, look, this is what I'm planning. This is what's got to happen. Would you be interested? Would you take on it? And he said, yeah, of course he would. Because Tom, at that stage, was looking maybe of just going playing permanently county cricket.
Yeah.
You know, we had no test representatives, nothing.
Yeah.
And we had this thing. So the whole idea was to try and really unite what was going on. And I got Damien to make an announcement through the press, which was either, you know, I might have been there for a very short period of time. But I think we ended up winning four of the last five games. We made the final that year and got beaten in Adelaide, which was one of the best games we played. We had 11 overs at the last two batsmen and we didn't get it. And then we made the finals, the grand final, whatever, for the next 4 or 5 years, and we won two of them and a few things. And
so what was the secret, do you think, in bringing all those different elements together and making a cohesive team out of them?
It was really just going back to the basics. I mean, I got a very simple philosophy on the way that I work. It's like a 5-point thing, I suppose. And the number one is the team.
Yeah.
You know, and I use the old cliche. It's really great, isn't it? Together each achieves more. But that was, I just drummed it down their throat. And then anybody that compromised the group or the team, we'd move them on.
Yeah.
And then I tried to instill what the second point, which is pride. You got to be, you know, pride, happy and proud of who you're playing for. And I made them understand what the history of the game was and the people that had gone before them and how they benefit from it. Then you got work ethic, which is, you know, that's a basic thing. And I set guidelines, strict guidelines, and anyone stepped outside them. But within those guidelines, we set it up to be able to cater for all the individual. And because there's so many egos and so many personalities, you still want them to come through. Mm. So you've got to cater for that. But if anybody steps out of it, you know, whatever, and about themselves. And then planning, we did a lot of planning on opposition. And then the last one was enjoyment. And we enjoyed it. If we had a win, we enjoyed it, you know. And when we were training, trying to introduce that. So I went back to the basics and then... Yeah, it just sort of melded from there. I tried to empower the players. I remember reading an article by, forgetting now, the Carlton coach.
David Parkin,
that's right. When he, at one stage, the players nearly revolted against him and he gave the players the power that year, I think, in selection and all that, and I think they won the premiership a year or two later. I remember reading that article and I thought, that's it, empowerment.
Yeah.
So... You know, Tom and I had a great relationship of how we'd work it and then just involved all the players as much as possible.
Mm.
And they become a great group. Gilchrist was just fantastic in the way that he was able to, you know, work the group because he was under pressure with the crowds and everything that was going on.
It was brutal.
So he was able to bring the younger blokes through it. And we just had a really good culture within the whole thing and that's what we worked on. And I always had the plan of... If I could step back and do nothing and we're still going, things were working all right. You know? But some people thought, well, you should be doing more. But, you know, it doesn't work like that. That's not the way I see it.
I read something that you said when you went to Yorkshire. You talked about the role of the modern coach where you said, I'm not there to correct technique so much and, you know, tweak their batting style. I'm a manager than a coach. Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think cricket coach is not the term. And I think Warney was the one that said, oh, you know, the coach is what, you know, you get on the thing to go down to the ground and catch the bus sort of thing. So, but what I try and do and always have done is provide the resources for them to play good cricket. But once the game starts, it's the captain that takes over.
Yeah.
To say that I don't coach, that's wrong. I mean, I coach in different ways. To get the better side of them, whether it's mentally or in the technique wise. As a bowler, I rate myself as a coach in that I can pick up the problems that a batsman has. My problem was getting him to adjust to that and or what to do, and that's where I used other people. Mm. And I think that's what you've got to do.
Yeah.
But I think it's more, at that level, it's more man management.
Yeah,
you know, if they haven't sort of, if they've got technical faults at that stage, they'll be found out, and it's unless they want to change that, it's going to be very, very difficult.
But
so I still think it's more of a management role, providing resources, and just being there as a coach, but as a mate as well.
Yeah, can we talk about the end of your first stint at the Wacker, and then your time in Yorkshire?
Yep.
I understand that all started with a phone call from Darren Lehman, who said there's a position coming up. Do you want it?
Correct.
Is that correct?
It is correct, yes. Yeah.
So off you go to...
Oh, we want to go now. Oh, yeah, I thought we were going to an ad.
Let's go to Yorkshire.
Okay.
Let's go to Yorkshire before we take a break, because this just sounds like an amazing time.
Yeah,
I mean, you've gone into a whole cricket world that is still very much sort of stuck in the old way of doing things, and there's some pretty outdated modes of operation there, and cultures and values and whatnot, some of which is starting to come to the surface now. But you've just gone right into the thick of it there at Yorkshire, haven't
you? Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, because we'd won the Shield and, I was going on, I was pretty happy doing what I want, and Buff rang up because he was the pro at Yorkshire.
At Yorkshire, yeah.
And he just said, look, would you be interested? And I said, oh, look, I'll listen, I'll talk, So he said, oh, you might get I forget the bloke's name, Chris, someone. He said, you might get a phone call from him. And yeah, no worries. So anyway, I didn't hear anything for a few days, and it was a Saturday night, and we were having a barbecue at home and had a few mates around, and it was about 12:30 at night. The phone rings, and it was him from Yorkshire, and I was sort of talking shorthand. He needed his notebook to take what I was talking about. He just sort of said, look, are you interested? And they arranged a video conference where I went to someone, I think it was in Highgate, went to this place and did a interview over that, and that's just sort of developed from there. And,
yeah. Did you know what sort of a environment you were heading to? Just to paint a bit, the time the club hadn't had a lot of success. I mean, I think you led them to their first
They hadn't won county for championship. 39 years.
Yeah, it was massively in debt. There was a fraud investigation going on in the background.
There wasn't at that time.
Okay.
That developed after my first year. But I did spend a bit of time chatting to some guys that played in county games, and I spoke to Tom Moody about it, and I had a really good discussion with him, and he said, what about yours? He said, they've got plenty of talent, but they just don't know how to win. He said, the club is so old-fashioned, and, the players, I can't understand why they're not successful. So, and I just sort of looked at their list and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen a lot of them. I hadn't seen any of them. So,
yeah.
I eventually accepted the job, and the first time I met them was in Cape Town in South Africa.
Right.
I flew there and met them. They had a pre-season thing down there. So that was when I spent a bit of time with them, and we set some sort of standards and values and that I'd used in the WA thing. And then I remember when we first got back to Headingley, the first training session was out there, and there was a bit of snow coming down, but they still trained.
Mm.
And it was bloody freezing. And I thought, what the hell am I doing
here?
And then soon after that, I got a message from one of the board members, mate, we don't want you here,
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Yeah, that came out very, very early that there were a number of people that didn't, because I was the first overseas coach.
Yeah.
And of course, they'd always set, they didn't want overseas players, and it took them a long time to bring an overseas player. And I think the first one was Tendulkar.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Handy.
Yeah, and then I think Richie Richardson was another. But Darren Lehman had been there pro for a while, and I'd sort of known him through when we played South Australia and, having a drink after the game and things of that nature. So he was good. And it was a bit of an eye-opener without any doubt at all. So
big job ahead to try to, get some value out of those players. I mean, you've got problems there when there's opposition to the recruitment of someone like Sachin Tendulkar.
Well, Tim, the season launch, I can remember, I had to make a speech at the season launch, the new boy. And I probably spoke about Australian values because I spoke about the team thing and what I wanted and all that sort of stuff. And because they didn't have anyone, I don't think anyone was playing Test cricket at that stage. And I just said that the whole thing that I like to do is I want to create a successful team. Because when you have a successful team, the individual success follows. A lot of times people are striving, I want to play Test cricket. Well, you've got to get involved in creating a successful team, knowing what your role is. And WA was exactly in that spot. We didn't have anyone in the Test side because we weren't a successful team. When you're a success, people look at you and say, well, why are they successful?
Yeah.
And they start analysing the different people in it. So that's the message that I try to get across to people, is that create a successful environment, successful team, your individual thing will come. If you go out by yourself, it just doesn't work. You put too much pressure on yourself. So I said that, you know, at this launch that, you know, this is my aim is to produce test cricketers. In the paper the next day, I should just worry about what my job is, and that's to win trophy, you know. And I just cop buggery over this. Mm. I shouldn't use that word. But I thought, Jesus, you can't win here at the moment, you know. Yeah. And the thing that I discovered with the players is they played with fear because they were so stood over by administration and they still had to wear a jacket to lunch. You'd been out there fielding, you're sweaty, you still had to wear a jacket to lunch. You had to do little things. So I cancelled, I stopped all that.
Yeah.
And I started to try to put some fun into it and make it that who cares if we lose, you know, but put ourselves in a position to win a game, you know, to lose a game because there was fear. They played with fear.
Mm.
And I was positive in the way we did things. Yeah. And it took a bit of time, but it was, with the help of Lehman, he was good because he could see what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
It worked really well. And even things like when you win a game, because they travelled all the time, you know, you'd play 27 out of 32 days or something, you know, and a lot of times you'd be in the car. So they'd finish a game. By the time I'd walk into the room, they're all nearly getting showered, packing their gear and getting in the car and driving back to Yorkshire. So I arranged at times that we would stay and actually celebrate our win, you know, go out to the pub, have a drink, you know, because they never used to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it was all just and there was a little more standover tactics, and it was very, very old-fashioned in Yorkshire at the time.
Yeah. It sounds like they've still got a few issues to work through even
this
day. Mm. Yeah. Some of those old habits taking a little while to flush through. Let's take another break. This is Inspiring Stories. Wayne Clark is our special guest from Yorkshire back to Western Australia at the helm of the WA side again for another stint. We'll get into that right after this.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Tim McMillan is my name. My special guest is Wayne Clark. Wayne, am I right in thinking that your time at Yorkshire sort of came to a fairly abrupt end? I know you still had a little way to go on your three-year contract that you'd signed. Yep. You didn't go for the full 3 years. Can you give us your version of that?
Well, you mentioned about the club got themselves into a bit of trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and there was at one stage in that second year that they looked like they weren't going to pay the players. It was at that. And I used to write an article. I was asked to write an article in, I don't know, it was Cricket World or one of the magazines. And I criticised the club, you know, which
that'll
I was
go
telling
down well.
The truth. Yeah. And it didn't go down all that well. But I didn't sort of get on too well with the administrator. We won the championship the first year, and then I also made, probably when I look back at it, the biggest blue I made was that I made Darren Lehman captain of Yorkshire the next year.
Yeah.
But the guy who'd captained him the year before was a fellow by the name of David Bias, who...
He was very much of that old school Yorkshire
mold, it was a Yorkshire person.
Yeah.
You know, and eventually he went and played for Lancashire, which was you know.
It's like going from the Eagles to the Dockers.
So every time people saw me, it was you did it.
Yeah.
You know? And I look back on that and it probably wasn't a successful move. It wasn't a real career type thing for me. But there was just a number of things that happened. We won a trophy the next year too, in the one-day CGI. We won that. So in the 2 years that I was full coach, we did pretty well. So, and then there was just different things that happened, and I probably opened my mouth too much at different times. And so they said, oh, we want you to stay, but would you stay as a bowling coach? And I said, no, I'll either do it or not. And I said, but I'm coming back, so you're going to have to pay me. You know, so I just went back and had a good time over there. And, but everyone gets moved on at some stage. I've got no problem with that.
Yeah.
But the players, I knew I had their support, and because what we did was fantastic, and they enjoyed their cricket. And then quite a number of them played, but they're just so old fashioned. It was you just couldn't do it. We had a one game, and I just mentioned to him off air, was that we went on a 2 week tour. So I think we went down to Essex, and then we were going across, and we ended up going across to Somerset. That's right. So we played, and because it was going to be away for 2 weeks, and I was just trying to get them involved, and said, "Okay, look, what we're going to do? I'll talk to some of the players. I want you to sort out that they have a bit of a beard growing competition, you know." So, at the end of the day, we draw it out of the hat, and you've got to go one with mutton chops, and you've got to be this, and you've got to be that. So it was just
a bit of fun.
Yeah. You know, for over a 2 week period. And then the final of that, the final day was in, as I said, in Somerset, was a 1 day game. But the unfortunate thing was it was telecast, and I didn't even take any thought of that. Well, after that game, the number of people from even just the members, the board members abusing me for allowing them to go onto the field looking the way they did. And
With facial hair.
It was just extraordinary. And it was interesting because Michael Vaughan at that stage had got back into the test side. He, in those days, they were all contracted, not by, there was no central contract, so they had to play for their county team, and they sort of nearly released them to go and play test cricket. It's all changed now. Vaughan went straight from this game. He had to go down to London for the test match there, and he arrived to go in, and they wouldn't let him in until he shaved what he had on. He had these mutton chops. But that was the style of the things there. And
yeah.
So trying, I probably didn't back off enough as much as what I should.
You're a troublemaker.
No, I wouldn't say I was a troublemaker. I was there to do a job, and that was to win tournament. And that's what they wanted.
Which you did.
And we did. But they probably didn't like the traditions.
Didn't like the way you did it.
So certain things. So yeah. That bloody Aussie, and he created problems. But.
And so you came back to WA and took the helm again with the now Western Warriors.
Yep.
How did you enjoy that second stint? It was life easier than it was at Yorkshire?
Oh, yeah, it was a lot easier. I mean, I think we won the one day of that year or the second year. The biggest thing, issue that I had of coming back was that while I'd been away that period of time, my son had come back. He had played AFL footy, or he played one game and then had gone at Collingwood, but injuries had absolutely killed him. And he came back and started playing cricket, started playing third grade. But after a year, he was in the WA team. He was playing for WA. So that was my biggest problem, whether I'd come back and coach while he was there. But because he had got in while I had nothing to do with it and he was established, I thought, well, yeah, I will come back.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, 2 years later, he had trouble with his back, and he had to have a pin in his back. And yeah, you know, so that part of it was really disappointing. But
so you passed on the back injury to him.
Well, I passed on all injuries to him, I think, which was because he had two shoulder reconstructions and a knee reconstruction. And then when he went to Collingwood, he broke a leg. And that was when he decided he might give it away. So he was lucky enough that he came back and played cricket and did all right. But, yeah, I did 4 years. It was good, but it probably was time to move on after that.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I'd do more coaching, but that just didn't work out. And, of course, in Australia, it's limited opportunities once people are there. And what occurred, of course, was that a lot when I first started, you're sort of like a coach on wages, really. But the position of coach developed more and more, and the players coming out of the game got more involved. 2020 came in, and I hadn't had much to do with that, apart from I was coach when the first 2020 game was played here in Perth when they had to shut the gates.
Did you like the concept when it first came up?
Yeah, I liked it. When I saw what happened, it was just extraordinary. You knew that it wouldn't replace the test match, but it just introduced a different crowd, you know, the mothers and the kids, and it can only do good for the game. Mm. So, yeah, that was an extraordinary night because they end up having to close the gates. They just couldn't fit any more in. They had people come into the members area, and that was just like, wow, what have we got here?
Mm.
But it's like all things. Sometimes they get greedy and they nearly screw it up. So You know, they've made it go too long, and hopefully they'll bring that. They've started to bring it back, and you know, keep it for what it was, and you know, don't kill the golden goose.
Yeah. When you walked away from WA for the second time, did you miss it? Do you still miss it now? Do you miss that coaching at the highest level?
Yeah, I think I'm coaching in the Premier League here, and that's harder than coaching. Yeah, because I've got about 50 blokes that all got different ones. Some just want to get on the grog and play, and some want to play for Australia. Some want to do this. So it is more difficult than that. Whereas dealing with the guys that have got that motivation and all that, it's a lot easier. And now, of course, when you've got the help and all the assistance that is there, it'd be fantastic. Because when I coached, I had a part-time physio and a guy that was probably a fitness fella, and that was it. You know, things have changed. They all do, and suddenly, coaching is a career for players coming out of cricket, where it wasn't really. We were the sort of early doors.
And aside from nurturing people through their cricket days, you also help young broadcasters get some experience and some professionalism behind the microphone at community radio level too, don't you, at Sport FM?
Which
you've been involved with for some time now.
Yeah, well, I got involved with them when they used to follow the cricket around and broadcast. Mm. They were the only ones doing live broadcast of Shield cricket.
Yeah.
And Colin Minson was involved with that. And they used to go around Australia, and they were the envy of every other state because they never used to get any coverage.
Yeah.
You know, and we used to get that coverage over a period of time. So I met Colin, and then I sort of encouraged the players to go up during the game, and we just built that relationship. And then when I finished, I got involved, and we do a breakfast show, and it's just a great place for young aspiring commentators or disc jockeys, whatever you want, to come in and
cut their teeth.
So, you know, I've been involved probably doing that for, well, I don't know, 15 years maybe, and the Corbin Middlemisses and Brett Spriggs, Ben Cameron, they're all with the ABC, a fellow named Adam McGrath, Chris Klefounis in the background here. But it's not only just getting on air, but it's also doing the production side of things. And I just loved working with the guys. And, I didn't help them too much, but it's...
I'm sure you did. Yeah. There must be something in you, Wayne, that gets some sense of satisfaction and reward from seeing some young talent and nurturing it, seeing it reach its full potential. Where does that come from?
I think if anybody asked me what did I enjoy more, playing or coaching, at times it's a difficult decision because I just went through a great era of WA cricket. We played, I played in 5 Shield winning tides or something. But I just love dealing and seeing people improve themselves, and it always has been. I just love the coaching side of things. There's parts of it I don't like that much now, but you know, the telling people that they haven't got a game and all that sort of stuff.
They'll have to go and shave their beard off.
But look, I've been really lucky in that. And you mentioned at the beginning, if you had regrets of not taking World Series, well,
no.
No, definitely
for all
not.
The reasons and stories you've just outlined over the last hour or so. Yeah, there you go. No regrets. Wayne Clark, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story with us. I appreciate
probably
it.
Probably spoke too much, but can't shut up. Thanks.
I imagine after a couple of Swan premiums in your hand, the stories get even better.
Well, we can organise that. There might be a few.
It might be a collector's item these days. Still doesn't taste any good, though. Thank you, though. Thank you for coming in and sharing your story. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inspiring Stories here on 882 6PR. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. We look forward to you joining us next time as we unearth another WA Inspiring Story.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.